You can compare what each gospel writer wrote about Jesus and his ministry in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. It's titled Jesus, A Study of the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Jesus, A Study on the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John costs $14.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Jesus, A Study on the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
If a guy like Donald Trump keeps trying to use religion to somehow recruit Christianity into the GOP, I will be standing there not afraid to talk about a different way to answer the call of faith and insist that God does not belong to a political party. I am ready to take on this president.
That's Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg speaking last night at the final Democratic debate before the Iowa caucuses. I saw someone tweet shortly after that, Mayor Pete should just wear a t-shirt to the debate that says, that's right, I'm the religious one. He isn't the only religious one, but he certainly is making religion a major feature of his campaign and of his campaign rhetoric. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 15th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media coverage of religion in Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. We'll be looking forward to the Confession of St. Peter observed on the 18th of January. Pastor David Peterson will join us for that. Then Dr. Michael New will, well, poke some holes in a recent study on abortion regret and a new poll on the role of religion in public life, especially as it reports on the opposition to abortion among Americans. Joining us to talk about media coverage of religion in Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Well, it seems that the media has just discovered the religious left again.
You mean that brand new powerful force in American political life that didn't have anything to do with the Vietnam War or the civil rights movement or lots of other stuff? You mean that?
Yeah, that religious left.
Yeah. It's so interesting and so funny that this comes up usually every 4 years, but for sure every 8 years. The rise of the religious left was a big, big subject when they were nominating two guys out of Arkansas, both of who went to church and went crazy, you know, in Baptist churches and all that. And, of course, I'm talking about Clinton and Gore. I remember covering that, and the religious left was a big deal. The religious left was a big deal when it was a guy named Jimmy Carter, you know, who was born again, yet his positions were both Southern Democrat but kind of progressive. And actually, I would argue that if you wanted to talk about the religious left, Carter is probably the single best person to talk about, because back then there were enough Southern Democrats left that that part of the old FDR coalition was still crucial. And you could still go into Baptist churches as a Democrat and talk to people. But somewhere in there, this thing called Roe versus Wade happened, and lots of other things. But that didn't mean the religious left went away. It meant that it simply became source of more uncomfort in talking about it, as increasingly the Democratic Party began to be defined by the public advocacy of things that clashed with centuries and centuries of basic Christian doctrines, not fundamentalist doctrines, but, you know, things like the Catholic Catechism and what all. But to me, the other place that I remember recently, the press, it's like they woke up like, oh my gosh, the religious left is so crucial, was Barack Obama and his famous speech when he talked about out in the blue zip codes of America or in liberal America, we worship an awesome God too. And there were evangelicals, I wrote a column about this way back then, there were evangelicals saying, oh my gosh, Barack Obama has heard of our God as an awesome God, you know. And they were trying to peel off the evangelicals and Catholics who, let me stress this, for tons of good reasons, were extremely uncomfortable in the country club Republican coalition. That's never been a comfortable place to be. A priest friend of mine said he recalled the first time that he went into a voting booth and voted for a Republican. He took his young son with him, his son who was about 5 or 6, and walked into the voting booth with his son in his arms, and then pointed at the switch and said, "Here, son, push that down." And the kid did, and my priest friend said he walked out of the door with his hands up going, "My hands are clean. I still haven't voted for a Republican." But he knew that based on his convictions about abortion and sexuality and religious liberty and a host of other things, he knew that he couldn't vote as a Democrat anymore. So between these worlds of the country club Republicans and the increasingly secular world of the Democratic Party, and especially kind of secular meets religious liberalism on moral and social issues, stuck in the middle of that is a very large number of Americans. And some of them would be kind of Jimmy Carter religious left, and some of them would be Pete Buttigieg religious left, even though Carter, of course, has evolved on his social beliefs to where he probably could cheer for Pete Buttigieg as well. But you get my point, right? That old coalition of Latino Catholics and active Catholics and labor unions and African-American churches and blue-collar churches and West Texas Church of Christ and all of those sorts of things, that old coalition has gradually been crushed and no longer exists. But this has been around forever. One of the first stories that I remember writing when I got to Denver, Colorado in the 80s was a year or so after. I wrote a lot of things, but one of the things I remember that really stands out was I wrote a story about whether or not evangelicals were going to be comfortable in the Republican Party of that day, yet at the same time, would they be comfortable in the world of the modern Democratic Party. And I was writing about a man. Do you know the name Ronald Sider?
I do not.
Ronald J. Sider. Have you ever heard of a book called Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger?
Yes.
Classic book on what I would call the religious left of that day. And he later wrote another book called The Scandal of Evangelical Conscience. Now, how about that for a book you could release right now and probably get on NPR, you know, really quick? But Sider was totally caught in this trap. And I remember going to a Bible study in Washington one year, and we were talking about these issues. And I said, "So how have you gotten through the last couple of presidential elections?" And this was in the 90s or the early aughts. Right around that time. And he said, "Well, I've got trouble." He said, "For years I've been writing in Bob Casey for president as a write-in." Bob Casey, of course, the devout Roman Catholic and progressive Democrat, but morally conservative Democrat, who was the governor of Pennsylvania and ran against Bill Clinton at one stage and threatened to run against him and primary him when he was in the White House. And Bob Casey was an old religious left. And Ron Sider had been writing him in over year after year for president. And I laughed because I had been writing Bob Casey in for president year after year through that same era. So when I talk about this, this is something that I have both covered and I've lived. But I think what we've got to talk about now, and what this is one of the reasons why the Trump era is so excruciatingly painful for so many people, is that the the style, the religious style and the content of the two parties has just continued to get further and further apart. So the religious left has gone further and further left, for the most part, on issues that there's just no way around it. You can't cover these issues without talking about religious doctrine as much or more than you talk about politics, which leads me to the last statement, and I'll throw it back to you. When Pete Buttigieg heads to South Carolina and visits African-American churches, he's primarily been visiting African-American churches that are in denominations on the left, primarily kind of similar to Barack Obama. When Buttigieg goes into a hall that's full of a bunch of ordinary African-American Democrats, the gaps between them is not just going to be gay versus straight or gay versus whatever. It's going to be a matter of a religious worldview. And the simple fact, and this has been pointed out by lots of people I respect, the big two would be Thomas Kidd, the Baptist historian, but then someone I really admire from the University of Akron, the pollster and scholar John C. Green, has been saying the same thing ever since the release of the first blast of data about the religiously unaffiliated and the nuns. And he had pointed this out in a seminar at the old Washington Journalism Center that I led in D.C. He had written all the data up on the board, and he said, here's the key. The largest identifiable religious point of view in the Democratic Party now and increasingly into the future is religiously unaffiliated / agnostic / atheist. That's now the largest religious point of view, the least conventionally religious people in America. Yet at the same time, the Democratic Party contains the most intensely religious component of American public life, and that is African-American churches, which is just as intensely religious in its worldview and its attempt to live it out and all the confusions that go with it as white evangelicals. Except the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the nuns and the African-American church are in the same party. And you can't face the attempts to nominate someone for the Democratic nomination for the presidency for 2020 without facing that question just as much, with just as many headlines and just as much ink, as the plight of the evangelicals and what they decide to do with Trump.
Speaking of the ink, how much did we learn from a recent New York Times feature on Buttigieg about what, if anything, Buttigieg actually believes? He does speak about religion a lot. Did we learn anything from the New York Times?
Well, I mean, we learned a lot about the component of people being uncomfortable about religion inside the Democratic Party. I mean, for example, the man who was the religious liaison for Barack Obama gets quite a bit of attention, and he should. That's a necessary point. But if the issue is, to what degree can Buttigieg peel off some of the evangelicals the way Barack Obama did in crucial states? To what degree can he talk to African Americans who are economically progressive but morally conservative? To what degree can he address Latino Assemblies of God pastors in the Florida corridor where Donald Trump probably won the presidency last time with a lot of their votes? To do that, you're going to have to actually talk to some of those people or talk to people who are experts at studying them. And it's like the New York Times knew that this was important, but they just couldn't get themselves to talk to those people. Let's see if I could read part of that. This sounds like what he said the other night at the debate. It was okay, he said, for us to talk about how we are formed and where our faith takes us. And he challenged the notion that religious values are the province of the GOP. God does not belong to a political party in the United States of America, he told his listeners. More than most rivals for the Democratic nomination, Mr. Buttigieg has put religion at the center of his presidential campaign, seeing it as an opportunity to speak to a broad swath of the electorate, both inside and outside of the Democratic Party. And later, they face the black church issue, except they say that that issue is only about homosexuality. I think it's actually a lot bigger than that. And then later, they talk about evangelicals who are tired even of Mike Pence and uses the phrase the cheerleader for the porn star presidency. Well, you know, it would have helped to talk to some never Trump evangelicals and talk to people who are critics of both Trump and the current makeup of the Democratic Party. Because if the whole point of this article was Buttigieg has a chance to reach out to black churchgoers, and he has a chance to reach out to evangelicals who are sick of Trump, don't you think it would have helped to talk to some of them?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion, Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign. We'll come back a little bit more on that New York Times feature.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Moeller, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You could even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. Performancefitness618.com.
Now that you have packed away the Christmas ornaments and chrismons for the season, it's time for some contemplation. Those chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam. The glitter has dropped off and they're being held together with toothpicks. Don't celebrate another Christmas harkening back to the age of glitter balls. Enter the 2020s with Ad Crucem's beautifully designed and lovingly made Christmons. We offer all the old designs and a whole lot of new ones. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday, January the 15th, we're talking about media coverage of religion and Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, I wanted to back up and focus on something that the New York Times kind of just passed off. You mentioned it briefly, and that is this almost non-existent support for religious candidate Pete Buttigieg among black voters. They just said, well, it's probably his sexual orientation. You think it's more complex than that?
Well, sexual orientation is obviously a part of it. But when you talk about sexual orientation, you get into a lot of issues about, you know, well, okay, the Bible is fairly important if you're going to talk about those issues. And a lot of blacks would probably struggle with what Buttigieg believes about the Bible. I thought it was crucial that early in the career of Barack Obama, nobody ever stopped and asked him about his other theological point of views. You know, before he started running for president, or right back at the very beginning of that, there was an interview in a Chicago newspaper, I believe it was the Sun-Times, in which they looked at the theology of the church he was going to, and didn't just look at the black theology. It looked at issues like, does Barack Obama believe in the resurrection? Well, it turns out that that's something he wasn't very sure about at all. What about heaven and hell and salvation? Did walking the aisle when he got baptized, did that mean something? What did that mean? And this very, very articulate man and very sincere religious liberal, all of a sudden you could just sense the caution, and you could sense that he knew that there were sirens going off in his head going, danger, danger, danger. Because in his first race for the presidency, Barack Obama really needed the black church. He needed them crucially. Do you remember when Barack Obama changed his views on same-sex marriage?
I remember he said he had evolved on that point.
Do you remember precisely when that was?
I don't. When was it?
It was right when he had, when it was very clear that there would be no opposition to him at all for his second term. In other words, right at the point where he no longer needed to go into any settings related to African-American religion where he might encounter dissent or uncomfortable questions, all of a sudden his mind changed on that issue. Before that, he had been, I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that all changed the minute that he no longer needed to stand for public office. And he could, as many people noted, he could say what he actually believed. I also thought one of the most interesting dramas of the Obama era in D.C. was where would he go to church? Well, he visited a whole lot of other churches. The problem, though, was that in terms of his natural religious home, he was most naturally a member of the United Church of Christ, which is perhaps the single most doctrinally liberal and heavily white denomination in America. Yet the first African-American president couldn't waltz into a liberal white church in D.C. and call it home, right? Yet at the same time, if he had consistently gone to African-American churches, he might hear some things he didn't want to hear, or even maybe get asked some questions he didn't want to be asked. Buttigieg faces a very similar kind of situation. He's in great shape with the religious left and with African-American and Latino believers as long as he's just talking politics. I think one of the crucial questions that people are going to end up asking him is not so much about gay marriage. It's going to be when they start talking to him about religious liberty issues. Because if we're talking about new tensions about the tax-exempt status of groups that work with crisis pregnancy, or groups that work with adoption, or groups that work with feeding the hungry, even in a context where there might be some religious content to that, if you were looking at organizations in America that could be very threatened by the loss of their tax-exempt status, a lot of black church ministries would be right at the top of that list. And at some point, he's going to end up answering questions about that. That is, if journalists will ask them.
What can you tell us about the size of the religious left?
Well, that's a great question. And we know that it's very small and that it's extremely white. When you actually look at who the leadership is, and if you look at it in the context of woke Twitter, for example, there have been some studies on this. I'm going to put a link up. I put a link up about it. Some folks have chased it down. It could be 6% of the population of America or less in its leadership. It's heavily linked to the world of liberal mainline Protestantism and to some lesser degree liberal Catholicism. And thus the fact that Buttigieg is a convert from kind of a fringe Catholicism, not so active, it didn't change him or affect him much, to being in the Episcopal Church, the fact that he's an Episcopalian is absolutely perfect for this issue in the sense that it gets you a lot of photographs in settings that look very, very religious, yet at the same time, what the Episcopal Church believes is very articulate, very sincere, and extremely doctrinally liberal. And the Episcopal Church is not doing super in terms of numbers. The point that I would make, again, is I've always thought that the decline, the statistical and demographic decline of liberal Protestantism in America is one of the most uncovered stories in American religious life. And not just because this very important part of the public life, which Ryan Berg, who does a bunch of stuff for us at Get Religion, he notes that the mainline component of American life in the 70s or something was something like 33-34% of America. And yet he's charted it and taking existing statistics over a 40-year period of time, he's projected that within 10 years, the mainline Protestant component of American life will be like 4-6%. Doesn't that statistic sound kind of like the religious left in terms of percentages? So the decline of the religious left is what opened up in the middle of the American religious spectrum this massive hole in the 70s and then into the 80s for the rise of the new evangelicals and the rise of evangelical Protestantism in America as what functionally is statistically the new main line, which is why the role of evangelicals in the Republican Party has received, justifiably so, so much ink over the last 30 to 40 years. The rise or the fall of the religious right is another one of those cover stories that comes out like every 4 to 8 years. And the flip side of that coin is there a hope for the comeback by the religious left? And what you're seeing with both of those stories is the fact that an awful lot of very important American newsrooms are struggling to do balanced, accurate, fair-minded coverage of religious positions on moral and social issues that don't fit, that don't fit with their newsrooms and don't fit with their editorial pages and don't fit with their editorial prejudices, biases, the makeup of the intellectual and social backgrounds of the people in their newsrooms. So, big story, religious right. Is it big? Is it falling? Is it in trouble? Are the new evangelicals leaving and are they going to vote for Buttigieg? There's that story. And the flip side of that is, can the religious left, please, 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 can the religious left come back? Because there are so many right-wing newsreaders and so many right-wing religious leaders who want to say that the press hates religion. That's something that I've always, for decades and decades, have tried to get people to realize that isn't true. The press doesn't hate religion. The press thinks that there's good religion and there's bad religion. And that's really what this is all about. Buttigieg is good religion. And thus he gets a particular kind of coverage that describes how he's good for America and good for tolerance and whatever else. And then conservatives get bad coverage because they are intolerant, bigoted. They're a threat to America and what makes America great. And this is a valid story, no way around it. And right now they're cheering for Donald Trump, or at least a lot of them are. And then a lot of them are saying, well, how do I not vote for Trump if this is the only options I have coming from the Democratic Party? So I feel like I've rambled around a bit, but do you see how those fit together? They really are the same story. What happens to the religious right, and oh my gosh, will the religious left ever come back, are flip sides of the same story.
With about 2 minutes here, Terry, I wonder why he's still being kind of propped up as a great strategist, because he obviously has trouble with black voters. The other place where he's weak in the polls, down to 1%, I think, last time it was measured, is likely young Democratic primary voters. I'm wondering when they're going to start writing the stories that Pete Buttigieg has completely miscalculated about how you can sell the religious left to Democrats.
Yeah, but see, if he isn't it, then you're back to Warren and Bernie, or you're back to Biden. And how do you think Biden plays with atheist, agnostic, nuns, really young, woke Democrats? How does Biden play with them? Not too well. How does Bernie play? He plays great. But then the Democratic leadership has to go, okay, are we really nominating Bernie? Do we want a Bernie Buttigieg ticket? Do we want a Biden-Warren ticket? And that's why, how is that going to play with African-American voters? How is that going to play with Latino evangelicals, one of the last of the unclaimed niches in American politics? Is that going to peel off young evangelicals? Is that going to give us a chance to beat Trump? And part of the angst you're hearing right now is Democrats trying to figure out who can land the black vote and the ultra woke white Twitter Democratic vote as well. How do we take those two religious niches and get them excited in the same party? What Thomas Kidd has been talking about and what John C. Green has been talking about for almost a decade now, that's a huge story.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. And he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to do so.
Pastor David Peterson joins us on the other side of the break. We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning to the Confession of St. Peter. The church observes it on the 18th of January. Peter said a lot of things. Jesus had a lot of conversations with Peter. Why does the church observe a day for St. Peter's confession? We'll answer that question right after this. You can compare what each gospel writer wrote about Jesus and his ministry in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. It's titled Jesus, A Study of the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Jesus, A Study on the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John costs $14.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Jesus, A Study on the Words of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
O morning star, of morning star, shine forth brighter through the light of
glory. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study Jesus and his works, Jesus' delay to help Lazarus, I am the resurrection and the life, Jesus raises Lazarus from death, and the plot to kill Jesus and Lazarus. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.